a sneak peek to Wretched for Radio.
Phil's Osophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
No, it is time for Too Wretched for Radio. A bit of a sneak peek. Not a complete reveal, but a sneak peek. Phil, I understand you're coming to Atlanta soon. Is that true?
That is true.
And why might you be coming to this sweaty, to this lovely city?
Because you asked me to. We're going to have we're going to have a live discussion about something.
And it's going to be lively. The subject that we're going to tackle, I think, might change. I want to actually talk to you about that one of these days. But at the moment, the current schedule includes one, Andy Stanley. Andy Stanley, who throughout the years has been making a fair amount of comments that have caused a lot of Christians to raise their Spock-like eyebrow and go, what's up with that? What would Charles say about that? Well, apparently he doesn't have a problem with it because he's not saying anything. The point is, Andy Stanley throughout the years has said increasing things that are perplexing. Now, Phil, we did talk about his statement that Christians must unhitch the Old Testament from their faith, which is just...
Yeah, you know, yesterday, our church every summer has this thing where they cancel the adult Sunday school classes and have special seminars instead. And so yesterday I taught a seminar that they asked me to teach on Christ in the Old Testament, some of the key...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really fun to study and do, but at the end of it, I talked about Andy Stanley and the unhitch from the Old Testament thing. And after you trace the images and prophecies about Christ through the Old Testament, the notion that, you know, Christianity needs to unhitch from that, it just seems ludicrous, because it is.
It was... Martianism. It was just classic Protestant liberal theology.
Yeah. Now, I noticed in looking at that, though, that Andy seems to say these things to stir up controversy, and then he gauges the seriousness of the controversy, and if necessary, then he tries to back away. And he's tried to back away from the implications of that statement, I think.
This happens to be from firstthings.com. Who's First Things, Phil?
Isn't that Catholic organization? It's a blend of Catholics and Protestants.
This is Wesley Hill describing Andy Stanley's modern Martianism. Andy Stanley's recent sermon about the place of the Old Testament in the life of contemporary Christians, expositing the scene of the Apostolic Roundtable in Acts 15. Well, that was the First Church Council. Stanley said, here's what the Jerusalem Council was saying to the Gentiles. You're not accountable to the Ten Commandments, part of a threefold sermon series titled Aftermath. All right. Is that phrasing about the Jerusalem Council accurate, that you are not accountable to the Ten Commandments?
Absolutely not. They weren't talking about the Ten Commandments. They were talking about the ceremonial aspects of the law. That one statement of Andy Stanley's is what... I think explains his agenda here. He's trying to legitimize a kind of antinomianism. Antinomianism being a rejection, a total wholesale, in his case, it's a total wholesale rejection of the law, the moral law, the ceremonial law.
You know what I think it is, though? I mean, I'm speculating. I actually think Andy wants people to believe at least something about Jesus. He does want them in some way to be saved. And he recognizes, and I know where he lives, I know the area that he is in, it's very affluent, it is very, very she. He thinks that it's just dumb to these really smart people. So let's just get rid of those bits that people think are ridiculous, and then maybe that they'll start coming to my massive church. I think his motives are right, but wow, the execution is abysmal.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even say I think his motives are right. I think that's a bad motive. In fact, I think at the heart of a lot of his errors is a pragmatic bent where he seems to think the whole...
No, I agree totally. I do agree with that. But I'm just talking about it. At least, but he still has, it's like, look, his understanding, you know, people coming to church, you know, genuine conversion, you know, virtually none, it's all wrong. But I do think, though, that at least it's like, okay, how do we get more people coming to church? Not a good motive, that's not right. But I think, though, his desire is at least... You know,
oh, I get what you mean.
I don't think he's trying to tear down evangelical Christianity.
Right. Well, yeah.
You disagree.
That's not his conscious motive, but I think it's clear that he hates historic evangelical Christianity. He hates pretty much every distinctive doctrine of evangelical Christianity, starting with the authority of Scripture.
The heretic Marcion, who lived approximately 85 to 160. This fellow at first thing says his 39-minute talk basically is a flirtation with the Old Testament Christian heresy of Marcionism.
Yeah.
That belief that the Old Testament is not authoritative in matters of Christian doctrine and morals.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah, Marcion had this notion that you sometimes hear parroted by people today that the God of the Old Testament is of a different character than the God who's revealed in the New Testament. That
right.
The stern judge and lawgiver of the Old Testament is not the God we meet in Christ or in the New Testament, where it's all about grace and forgiveness and kindness. That's a surprisingly widespread and very popular view, because it makes it possible to sort of write off the standard of righteousness that condemns us all.
Let me share with you a couple of quotes. Please, if necessary, tighten those headphones so your head doesn't explode. Quotes from Andy Stanley from this particular 39-minute bombshell. He said, God has done something through the Jews for the world. Guess what word is coming next, Phil? Can you guess?
But.
But the through the Jews part of the story is over, and now something new and better and inclusive has come. Ay, is that a mess?
You know, he's going to have to throw out not only the Old Testament, but also Romans chapter 11, which specifically says that God is not through with the Jewish nation.
Right.
God hasn't cast his people away, Paul says.
Well, besides, he is a master at doing this. He's conflating thoughts, delivers it in a way where it's like, well, that part, yeah, but the other, but I saw it, and I mean, the through the Jews part of the story is over. No, it's not. Furthermore, why would we want to remove its context from the story? It has everything to do with the Abrahamic covenant. It has everything to do with, you know, Jesus being Jewish. Here's the next statement from Andy Stanley. You just stop me whenever you feel like you can't take it anymore.
All right, stop.
This was a general call to avoid immoral behavior, but not immoral behavior as defined by the Old Testament, rather as defined by the Apostle Paul. Is this from Gracie and Truthy, by the way? No, this is still the same sermon. The Apostle Paul was explicit and specific about sexual immorality, but he did not tie it to the Old Testament. The Old Covenant, Law of Moses, was not the go-to source regarding sexual behavior for the church. The Old Testament was not the go-to source regarding any behavior for the church.
Yeah, that is really a dangerously false doctrine. What he's arguing is that there is no such thing as settled moral law, that the moral law being that aspect of the law that reflects the character of God, and therefore it cannot ever change. The moral law is the eternal principles of divine law, summed up for us in one sense in the Ten Commandments. Those are all moral precepts, but it's summed up even more succinctly in the first and second great commandments, that you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That really embodies and encapsulates the moral law. Those are principles that never change, and it means murder is always wrong. It means dishonoring your parents is as wrong as it's ever been. You go through the Ten Commandments, And with the exception of the Sabbath, and I would say there's a moral principle there too, but that's beyond the scope of what we're talking about. Let's just take the other nine commandments, all of them clearly still in force, all of them repeated in the New Testament. And occasionally Paul does go back to the Old Testament law to substantiate the commandments he gives in the New Testament. For example, in Ephesians 5, when he says, "Children, obey your parents," he says that's the first commandment with a promise attached to it. And he's talking about the Ten Commandments. He clearly, then he doesn't turn around and say, but, you know, forget what the Ten Commandments say now and listen to a different set of principles. If the moral law of God were changeable like that, then you couldn't say this reflects the character of God. You'd have to say these are transient principles that are subject to change. And that's exactly what Andy wants to say. And I think the underlying reason is because he wants to be in step with what's currently fashionable and politically correct. And he's already made, you know, some massive hints that he's going to get to the point where he's okay with same-sex relationships and homosexual relationships in the church. He's not going to condemn that as sin, and he's working towards that point. And in order to get to that point, you do have to throw out the morality of the Old Testament and say none of that's in force anymore. Forget the Ten Commandments. Forget the standards of sexual purity set forth by the Old Testament, and only what's in the New Testament then counts. And that means things like bestiality. The New Testament says nothing about bestiality. How do we know that's sinful? Because it's part of the moral law in the Old Testament. And the same, to some degree, is a similar principle with the issue of homosexuality, which is condemned in the New Testament, but if you take out the Old Testament foundation for that, it's much easier to explain away those verses in Romans 1 and you know, 1 Corinthians that condemn homosexuality. And I really think that's what's driving Andy's drift in this way. He doesn't want to be at odds with the culture.
When Gracie met Truthy. Yeah. Now that, do you know what that was that we just did right there for the last 12 minutes and 35 seconds?
A rant?
Okay, do you know what else that was?
Now I give up.
That was a Phil Johnson, is what that was. It was like a Phil Johnson sermon, the introduction, because that isn't the part that I actually wanted to talk about. So that was setting the... I love it when you do that, Phil. I think in that sermon that I referred to recently, I think your setup, your introduction before you got to Romans 8:34, it had to have been 30 minutes.
Yeah, I have a tendency to do that. In fact, I recognize this is a great fault of mine. Sometimes my introduction will take up more than half the time I have to preach, and then invariably my conclusion is abrupt and very short. So I have long introductions, very short conclusions. And so my sermons always have that sort of tilt to them.
This is the article that I wanted to share with you. It's from Relevant Magazine. We could probably stop right there.
Yep.
Nevertheless, the headline reads, it was an interview with Andy Stanley. Why Andy Stanley thinks his sermon critics, that would be you, Phil Johnson, should be more, guess what word is used there?
I don't know.
Phil, you should be more...
gracious?
Nope.
Quiet?
he thought that, but he said curious. You should be more curious, Phil.
Oh.
You should think this through first. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to respond once again to criticism stemming from a single sermon that is a part of a series. All right. Here's what listen for a theme, Phil. Listen for a theme. The confusion always stems from the fact that a handful of academics hear about some outlandish statement I've made, and for them it's blood in the water. So here's what you did, Phil. You only heard him say, unhitch the Old Testament from Christianity. You didn't listen to the entire sermon, and you didn't listen to the entire sermon series, nor did you listen to every sermon that he's preached this year to really understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
I almost snapped when I heard that.
Well, I didn't take it personally because I am not an academic, so he can't be talking about me.
Well, he's talking about anybody who criticizes him. This is the standard Andy defense, which makes me bonkers, Andy.
That's a common defense, though. I mean, that was...
You've got to listen to more.
I've said for years that the defenders of N.T. Wright, they have basically one answer to every criticism, and that is, well, you haven't read all his works yet.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
Well, some sentences stand on their own. I mean, you can't put "let's unhitch the Old Testament from Christianity" in any context that makes it palatable. None.
Yeah.
Including his. So, this chin boogie, here's his next defense. None of the academic types who have criticized my preaching have ever reached out to me before posting their critiques. So there you go, Phil. You got to zip it.
Okay.
Do we have to reach out to Andy before we can talk about him?
Well, not about his public statements. If I was aware of some private issue with him, I would be obliged to go to him privately first. But when he says stuff like this, puts it on YouTube, and it affects people who I am pastorally responsible for because they watch his stuff, and it raises questions in their minds that I have to answer. What, am I obliged to call him up and ask his permission before I refute something false he said? That's ridiculous. It's ludicrous.
Yeah.
And that is the refuge of a coward. You know, you didn't talk to me first. If I had the opportunity to talk to him, I'd be happy to do it. You should invite him to the fall.
Already did.
So you did reach out to him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes, we did. Would you like to come into the Wretched Studios to talk to me and Phil Johnson about some of your terrible sermons? And I can't believe that he said no. Well, the reason that I invited him was, first of all, I thought it was appropriate. Second of all, he lives in this same town. It's not where he could Uber over here, although I suspect that might be below his standard mode of transportation. Nevertheless, I thought it would be the right thing to do. And he has said, hey, I want to talk about this stuff. Let's talk about this. Be curious. Well, he doesn't seem at least available on that particular night in August when you and I are going to be together.
No, and again, that's so common. That was the emerging church thing. You know, they got to the point where the emerging church movement said, stop calling us the emerging church. We don't want to be a church. We want to be a conversation. Call it the emerging conversation. That was Brian McLaren's plea. Yeah. Call it a conversation. But so I said, okay, let's have a conversation. And it turned out they didn't want to have a conversation with anybody who wanted to challenge them or disagree with them. They only wanted a conversation amongst themselves, among people who were already sympathetic to the position. And very quickly, the movement broke up because you can't constantly say, let's have a conversation. Now, let's talk about this when then you turn around and refuse to talk. It discredits your whole thing. And so, in a way, I'm kind of glad for Andy to answer that way, because it demonstrates that he's not really serious about any of these things anyway. He's shooting from the hip, and nobody who shoots from the hip wants critics.
Let me share another quote from the article, Relevant Magazine. Anyone who listened to all three parts of the series probably understood the point I was making. I approach a message series like a single sermon. So, Phil, not only do you need to listen to the whole sermon, you need to listen to the whole series. Otherwise, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, isn't that convenient? All right, let me share this.
Yeah, now, you know what? I listened to the sermon, and I read several analyses of it, and I haven't yet encountered anybody who wrote about it or talked about it who actually understood what he claims he thinks everybody understood. Nobody got it. I think that troubled everybody who heard it, except maybe the appreciative audience who are conditioned to applaud and nod agreement with everything he says.
Well, I've said this before, Phil, and I'm sticking with it. He is a master at talking a lot, 39 minutes, and either saying nothing or saying in such a fashion that everybody can be pleased with it, nobody's offended by it. It's truly artistry of the worst sort.
Yeah. It's a kind of demagoguery. Demagoguery is to be a demagogue is to speak to the prejudices and fears and settled beliefs of your audience, to say, in other words, to people what you know they want to hear, and to use their prejudices and fears as a tool to convince them. So you're not really making any logical or biblical point. You're simply preying on people's ignorant fears. And that's what he's doing. He's speaking to people's ignorance rather than actually teaching them biblical principles.
Now, you brought up Brian McLaren. So, do you know what that caused me to do?
No.
I went looking for Brian McLaren. I was looking specifically for the album he recorded to play you some of his greatest hit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, didn't find that, but I did find a voice that you might recognize talking about Brian McLaren.
Brian McLaren, who's one of the leading, if not the leading, writer in the emerging movement, has a new book called The Secret Message of Jesus. That's always scary, but Jesus doesn't have a secret message. He revealed his message. In an age of global terrorism and rising religious conflict, it's significant to note that all Muslims regard Jesus as a great prophet, that many Hindus are willing to consider Jesus as a legitimate manifestation of the divine, that many Buddhists see Jesus as one of humanity's most enlightened people, and that Jesus himself was a Jew. Hey, he's saying, isn't it great? We all like Jesus. Let's start the conversation. He goes on, a shared reappraisal of Jesus' message could provide a unique space or common ground for urgently needed religious dialogue. And it doesn't seem an exaggeration to say that the future of our planet may depend on such dialogue. So we'll set aside all of our doctrinal differences to save the planet. Let the people go to hell.
Let me, as an expert in sarcasm, say that was about as sarcastic as I've ever heard John MacArthur be. Wow. That was just dripping. Oof-da. All right, Phil. Last quote from Andy Stanley from this particular interview. Years ago, I embraced a new approach to preaching. How I talk about sin, faith, discipleship, and the Bible in light of my concern for what is happening in our culture, my critics, Phil Johnson, should be more curious.
Yeah, I am curious. I'm curious why so many people want to hear what he has to say. Honestly, I don't get it.
Yeah, that's a mystery to me, too. Mystery to me, too.
But it was similar with Rob Bell. It was similar with Brian McLaren. Look, if you want to reject Christianity, just do it. Why pretend you're a Christian and then spend the rest of your life and so-called ministry attacking and undermining the core principles of Christian doctrine? And that's what a lot of these guys are doing. And I would include Andy in that thing. He has gone tooth and nail against the principle of biblical authority and biblical inerrancy.
Andy did another interview. Did you hear about that one, Phil? It just happened within maybe the last couple of weeks. Do you know which one I'm referring to?
Nope. I probably didn't read it because when stuff like that comes through my news feed, I set it aside for reading when I'm in a good mood, and I'm so rarely in a good mood these days that I never get to those things.
Well, I'm sorry. We need to get you cable TV or something. Okay. He did an interview with Michael Brown, our fiery friend from the New Apostolic Reformation Movement. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
He went on Michael Brown's program. And the reason that I would say I didn't listen to it, but I think the reason we didn't hear about it is because, once again, Michael played all chummy, no critique, doesn't want to be judgmental. So I suspect they ended up singing Kumbaya at the end because of Michael's inability to really discern or criticize anything.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's too bad. I would expect Michael, I'll have to watch that because that has made me curious. I would expect Michael to actually challenge him on some of this because I think Michael Brown, for all his faults, probably has a higher view of Scripture than Andy Stanley. That doesn't say much for either one of them, but...
Ow! Ow! That hurts.
But I'm not making a joke. Honestly, I think I would expect Michael Brown's view of Scripture to be higher than that of Andy Stanley's.
The problem is he just won't seem to actually apply it to his friends in the New Apostolic Reformation movement. All righty-do, Mr. Johnson. That is it. No Mas on Andy Stanley. You'll have to tune in. Is it August 19th or 20th? We're going to be doing that clam bake.
You asking me?
Yeah.
I haven't booked my flights yet, so
So this is all tentative, apparently. Uh-oh.
No, I'll book my flights as soon as we have a date on the calendar, but...
I think we're going to do it Sunday, August 19th. We're going to do a Facebook Live event. The subject might be Andy Stanley and more. See what I did there? And more. Beth Moore. See what I did right there.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?